Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
TickPick should be your first choice to buy basketball tickets because they save fans money by never charging any service fees, ever. TickPick is the exclusive ticketing partner for the Laker Film Room podcast and Blue Wire Network.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And the Lakers lost in Milwaukee yesterday, but as frustrated as I was after the Chicago game, I thought the Milwaukee game was, or at least has the potential to be, a great stepping stone for the team. I want to start with the very first play of the game on offense, because a lot of my enthusiasm is built around the performances of Russell Westbrook and Talen Horton-Tucker in yesterday's game. And both guys are great pressure on the rim guys. We've talked about that so much in the theoretical, and seeing space opened up for them more and more in yesterday's game was one of the things that I was really excited about, along with I thought our transition attack in terms of THT up the wing. It's not transition points, but it's like early offense. Anyway, I was really happy with our driving lanes and our ability to get to the rim. Very first play of the game, D. The ATO runs some false action out of a 1-4 high set, the old UCLA cut set, right? That Luke used to run that in LeBron's first season here. Runs some false action out of that, and then clears open a ball screen in the middle of the floor with AD and Russ getting downhill. And Giannis is the guy that's got two in this situation. And so Giannis makes a defensive player of the year caliber play where he kind of gobbles up Russ and takes away the passing angle as well, forces a turnover. But it wasn't an 18-second play for a cross screen for an AD post-up, right? It was, let's get Russ and Anthony Davis going downhill. I loved it, and I thought it really set the tone for how we played. You pointed out the ghost screens that we ran a couple of times in the first quarter that were other examples of that. Russ had a 15-assist, 3-turnover night. Talen has been wonderful. We'll get into him more as the show goes on. But I was really thrilled offensively, even though we didn't hit shots with our shooters, with just kind of the concept of that game and how we attacked.
I was definitely encouraged by yesterday's game. I feel like I sound like a broken record because I haven't been upset, really, about any of these losses, so to speak. I think all of them can be contextualized properly. When viewed through the right lens, you see or you get the gist of what occurred that game. I, too, was happy with a lot of the stuff the Lakers were doing on the offensive side of the ball. That action that I was describing before, like the Lakers, one of the things that they can do is, you've mentioned this a lot, Pete, but there's like foot speed issues with the team. Mm-hmm. And we often think of foot speed issues in very specific on-ball ways, right? Like either defensively or offensively in your ability to create separation when you have the ball. Or if it's off-ball work, it's more, can you get to the corner on a closeout.
Yeah, can he sprint on the wing on offense, right, to deep corner, sure.
But basketball, and this is true in soccer, Mike, so I'd love to get your thoughts about this, is as well. We often talk about advantage. And advantage within basketball, similar to soccer, doesn't necessarily have to mean like, oh, I have advantage on the ball. It's creating you can create separation and gain advantage at any spot on the floor, right? And so the ghost screen actions that the Lakers were running, they actually start with screen-to-screener actions, with ram screen actions, right? And so AD is setting screens for Carmelo Anthony in order to give Carmelo Anthony space to then come set a screen for Russ in order to give Russ some space and create micro advantages within a single set. And I think that that's yep. one way the team can start to account for some of the speed and quickness deficiencies mm-hmm. that they have within the half court. And so, Mike, am I off base there a little bit, even in like comparing it to soccer where you do all of you do so much work in soccer off the ball. Like, let me run into open space here, and then the ball is going this way, and you're always trying to create advantages all over the pitch in order to then set yourself up to be in a scoring position. And that may be way later down down the road. And so I liked some of the Lakers' offensive approach from that perspective in yesterday's game with, can we create micro advantages within a possession? And they have to do more of that, especially without LeBron, because he is a singular advantage creator with the ball.
Well, first of all, Pete, welcome to Boston, buddy. Okay.
This is the first time I think I've looked at Boston in real time, if that makes sense, right? Like, it's not
I'm holding my computer to show him downtown Boston out of my hotel room right now. In the Darius, how would you describe the look on his face? Like, disgust?
Yeah, there's a certain mix of disgust and vitriol.
Vitriol.
Yeah, there's like decades of pent up
angst.
It's
the fuel for the pettiness, right? Yes, the pettiness is the final stage of this look on my face. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But green beer. But
thank you
actually,
for that, Mike.
If he drinks green beer, it gives him that same feeling. So, Darius, your soccer analogy is apt. And in soccer, it's all about creating chances. And the best teams now have the best coaches are able to build in certain styles and certain movements that put the most amount of players possible in an attacking space, yet still allow space within that scheme. And that requires a lot of movement and is really difficult and takes a lot of training. And then, of course, the ones that end up being the best out of those are the ones that can finish. And the Lakers were creating all kinds of good looks. They just couldn't finish. And after the game, now, like, there were a couple at the rim, but it was mostly on wide open threes that were created. And the guys that you want shooting the wide open threes.
That's so basketball, Monk, man. Yeah.
Yeah. And like Monk and Ellington were both 1-for-7. And that's the game. That is the game. Like, there are other things, sure, that play out there. I mean, Melo was 2-for-8. At this point, I think I'm not expecting Melo to be hitting at that kind of a rate, given what toll he's had on his legs up until the point where LeBron gets back.
I'm there with you.
He can get slotted back to the bench. But I do expect that Monk and Ellington are going to find a way to hit more of those shots. So that part was frustrating. But I think the fact that they're creating those looks is certainly a good thing and portends towards what they've been trying to get to with this system. I think there's a reason why Russell Westbrook had what Frank Vogel called his best game of the season, in that they're starting to learn how to create that space for Russ, how to let him attack his guy. So that stuff is starting to happen. My concern comes more on the defensive end, and I think that's going to be the theme for the rest of the season, given where this team is at and this just the big change that they've had. But Pete, I don't want to get off point on that yet, unless you want to go there.
No, Mike, I actually would like tomorrow's episode to be entirely about how the hell do you keep people out of the paint when you go small, and what are some of the strategies? Because I think that part of the fundamental shift that we're going through is going to be on the defensive end in terms of Vogel's defense, you funnel toward your bigs, right? Like, that's the whole point of what you're doing on the perimeter. We're not going to give you shit from behind the 3-point line. We're going to chase you off of there. And then you're going to have to take a shot over this 7-foot athlete with a 7'6" wingspan. Good luck. While that guy who chased you over the top of the screen is breathing down your neck from behind, right? But like, why would you funnel if you're small, right? We're more of a containment defense naturally with this roster. And it's just a completely different way of playing defense. We went to the 2-3 zone yesterday in the third, and it was really successful. Let's have a whole pod about this tomorrow, because it's a super interesting topic that if we're going to have AD at the five, Lakers have to be good at this in order to have a chance. But to bring it back to Russ and THT, Russ in particular, for his part, we've talked so much, D, about what the Lakers need to do for Russ, that I think that there's a worthy conversation of what does Russ owe the Lakers in this process of getting better. I thought his decision-making, he passed up a ton of shots where he could have taken a pull-up jumper. So he turned it over that first play of the game where Giannis ate him up on the, you know, that play that was drawn up. He tried to find Avery, I think, on a baseline cut where it wasn't there and it got deflected. And he had two turnovers in the first, like, 4 minutes of the game, and only one for the rest of that game. I thought his decision making and when he attacks is super important. His early attacks, when he's like isolated on Connaughton, that's the time to go. And he was choosing to go and be really aggressive against him. Those attacks are coming from the wings. The elbow pull up when it's kind of stagnant and they've gone under, he was passing that shot up a lot. Am I seeing what I wanted to see there, did you see that as well?
I think that's spotted on. The thing with Russ, and I think this is the part about Russell Westbrook that is probably frustrating to those who are not as kind about what his contributions are to winning basketball, is that he will have a game like this. He'll have plenty of games like this over the course of the regular season. And then 2 weeks later, he'll have a game where, oh, guess what? That pull-up jumper is back. Because there is a game within the game that Russell Westbrook often plays.
Yes. That's true of any player, too.
It is true of any player.
Or from your decision makers, right? Like, LeBron plays a similar game within the game in terms of, like, this is how I'm going to attack. They're the decision makers of not just that you attack, but how you go about it.
LeBron's game like that, though, doesn't lose you the game very often, though. You know, like
No. LeBron's way better at it. I'm just saying that, like, one is a 10 out of 10 at that, and the other is not a 10 out of 10 at that. But they do have the same type of job, at least historically throughout Russell's career.
The thing I appreciated about Russ's game yesterday, and I'd love to get your thoughts about this part of it as well, is that the team-centric nature of his decision-making was super strong. Like, there was I don't know if this is what was happening in his head, but there was a playing out of scenario. There was scenario playing out, right? There was game theory happening within the game of, if I do this, the likelihood is that, and then the possession ends, right? And so how do you work around that? And he found the right decision more often than not, I thought.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want you to get into that a little bit, D, that idea of, like, what is it? Because I think being able to see what Russell Westbrook does well is important just in the overall conversation. And the specifics of it, I want to get into that more. Let's take a break. We'll come back and do that. Lakers basketball is finally back. And there's no need to exhaust yourself by searching all over the internet to find Lakers tickets anymore. Because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site. And the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NBA tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that other ticket sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all their NBA tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find better prices on the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in purchase price. I'm excited to see this Lakers squad get out in transition this year, and there's nothing like seeing a great fast-breaking team in person. Visit tickpick.com/LFR today and use promo code LFR to save $10 on your first order of Lakers tickets.
Are you looking for ways to skip the trip to the post office and dodge all that hectic holiday shopping traffic? Why not save time and money with Stamps.com? Stamps.com lets you compare rates, print labels, and access exclusive discounts on UPS and USPS services all year long. It just makes sense, especially if your business sends more mail and packages during the holidays. Whether you're selling online or running an office or side hustle, Stamps.com can save you so much time, money, and stress during the holidays. Access all the post office and UPS shipping services you need without taking the trip, and get discounts you can't find anywhere else, like up to 40% off USPS rates and 76% off UPS. Save time and money this holiday season with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code FILMROOM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter the code FILMROOM.
So you're talking about the game within the game. Russell Westbrook is not considered a game manager type point guard. In fact, in many respects, he's one of the worst point guards in the league at some of the conventional aspects of game management. But there's part of his game management that I think is absolutely brilliant in terms of how he positions his body, how open he gets his teammates, how he's able to see and find advantage and be very accurate with his passes. Talk to me about that, D, about that idea of the game within the game that Russ plays, that plays into his decision-making.
There are just so many times where he doesn't get enough credit for the things that he's doing offensively that actually matter and help you, mm-hmm. right? And I thought the game against the Bucks was the perfect example of the Lakers lost. Russ probably isn't going to get any accolades for how he played. I'm glad Vogel brought up the idea that like it was one of his better games, and it was because it was, not just from a stat standpoint, but from the micro decisions in each possession, which is what we're talking about here, right? And so those ideas of attack here, is the advantage there all the way to the rim? Oh, it is. Wait, okay, so now I'm in the rim, or I'm in the restricted area. No, the finishing angle's not there. Jump stop, head fake. Is the shot there? It's not. Reverse pivot, flare out, right? Reset. And there are so many of those where it's just like, okay, well, that keeps the possession alive.
That's right. Right.
And the Lakers are losing the possession battle almost every game because they're a high turnover team and they're a bad rebounding team, right? And so these are two areas where you actually need Russell Westbrook a lot. You need him to help on the backboards, mm-hmm. and you need him to make better decisions as a passer and as a ball security player, as a game manager, right? And it's silly to say, and this is a football analogy, you're not going to try to turn Michael Vick into Trent Dilfer, right? And so he's never going to be a game manager guy. But what you want is to choose those moments where now is the time to break out and scramble versus, no, now's the time to throw it out of bounds and keep the drive alive, right? Because I'm not going to run around and take a sack here. That's bad game management. And I thought I thought this game against the Bucks, Mike, was one of Russ's better game management from a decision-making perspective, because empty possessions are what's going to kill the Lakers right now. And they got more chances, I thought, within the number of possessions that they had. And just like you said, it was the finishing that let them down. It wasn't the process that let them down. And that was encouraging to me.
Yeah, and I think because what you said earlier about Russ not getting credit sometimes for the good plays that he makes, I just think about the nature of getting an assist. And if you have 15 of them, and we at this point, I think we kind of gloss over that. And that means that he put the ball in a position for somebody to score, you know, and have a good look and have a good shot 15 times, and it actually happened, which means there were probably several other plays where somebody didn't score off that. And so that is an incredible skill. That is an incredible talent. It also means that he had the ball a lot and that his usage is really high. And that's going to tick back some when LeBron gets back. And so can he stay, though, in that ratio? So can it be 10 assists to 2 turnovers? Or can it be 7 assists to, I'm not going to say 1 turnover, but okay, 7 assists to 2 turnovers on certain
nights?
Well,
3-1 is normally where you want. Yeah. You want your lead ball handlers to live in that 3-1 area if they're a dynamic player, right? You can be Monty Morris or Tyus Jones and be 4-1 or 5-1. But guess what? That's when you're the Trent Dilfer.
That's right.
Then.
You're not taking chances, which is really what that means.
Yes. And so for a dynamic player, 3-1 is fine. On some nights, 2-1 is fine if you're actually kicking the other team's ass, right? And Russ has that in him too. But I just want to make that point that you don't want to neuter him as a decision maker. What you want is for him personally to be sharper, right? And there has been a sharpness that is just lacking in him too many games this season, particularly in the ones where LeBron has missed so many games. And you'll never expect Russ to be LeBron, but he needed to inch a little bit closer in that direction. And against the Bucks, he was almost all the way there, really. It was a lot of, I see it happening, and now I'm going to move everything around to make sure that it goes a certain way.
Right. And as there, and as this progresses this season, and LeBron right now, it sounds like 50-50, according to David McMenamin. And apparently LeBron said, I've read in the LA Times this morning, somebody caught him on the way out and asked if he was going to play in Boston. And he said, I don't know. We'll see. So if he doesn't play in that game, then we're kicking it to the next one. And I was listening to on the flight back, I was listening to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And so the line comes up, too many Urkels on your team, that's why your win's low, which is one of my favorite lines. And that does apply directly to the NBA. So if you have too many guys out there that can't play or that can't shoot, and even this goes in the sense of like Russ assists or somebody else, then like those weak spots are going to drag you down. And I think we would all love them to get to the point where it's fewer Urkels and it's more guys that you're used to out there. And by the way, shout out to Semi Ojeleye, 0-for-7 last night. That was not helping Milwaukee anytime that he was on the floor, right? Were times that the Lakers were able to come back.
We're going to talk about a Semi Ojeleye post-up in tomorrow's episode because that's one of the examples of how to play small ball, right? Anyway, I'm glad you brought up the Urkels because the tenor of this episode has been really overwhelmingly positive, in part because our shooting from good shoot, like that's part of basketball. Your shooters are going to have games where they go 4-for-22 on their shots when normally on the same quality looks, they'd go 10-for-22 and then you win by 8, right? That's basketball. That's going to happen. We lost that game in particular during the Urkel lineups, right? We were up like 22-12 to start that game. And then the end half of that first quarter is when Giannis is getting to the rim over and over again. We're going to talk about all that tomorrow. And then we're getting our butts kicked at the start of the second quarter and the fourth quarter because Vogel takes, and it's a justifiable approach, right? We're down so many guys. There have been a couple of games where Vogel has just had like a 4-minute stretch,
yeah,
where I call them survival lineups,
yes,
that I'm almost certain are done to preserve the integrity of the other 20 minutes in that half, where it's like I can get the lineups that I want for 20 minutes. Then we've got this 4-minute stretch where it's just Frankenstein.
Pete, this is what the Warriors did last season,
mm-hmm,
when they sat Steph and Draymond together. And it's just like you just hope to survive.
Yeah,
during those
survival
minutes,
lineups,
because
yeah,
you don't have enough talent on your team to actually say we can spread this out. We could play all of these other guys. What you really want to do is win those other 40 minutes. You want to win those 40 minutes by enough that the minutes, mm-hmm, that you almost expect to lose, like that's the game they're playing. Anyways,
I think that THT could be on the floor during those lineups, right? Like I see where he's going, and I think it's totally, you know, understandable. But I think just having one guy on the floor that can get his own would be a huge help. Nonetheless, that's where that game was lost, Mike, is that stretch of the game. And that's why when I looked at the starters, when I looked at the lineups that were more like these are the guys that are going to play or didn't have two or three guys on the floor that weren't going to play, I was really encouraged by that.
The one stretch that I thought, if you want to say like the worst stretch of the game where they lost it, was actually the end of the second quarter when Bobby Portis went on like a personal assault and they couldn't clear a defensive rebound. And they went from basically being down one with 4 minutes left to being down 11 at the half. So that wasn't one of those lineups.
That's fair. But the second quarter, the beginning of the second quarter and the beginning of the fourth quarter were where those leads were lost. Let's talk about that end of second quarter lineup, though, D. We were giving up. It's hard to do this without getting into the defensive stuff. Mike, let's table that for tomorrow. I want to talk about that lineup in particular, because I know you have concerns about our ability to protect the rim. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about THT.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Talon can play.
Yes.
Talon, if Talon is what he... Part of what impressed me about last night's game is that the nature of Milwaukee is they are a rim protection team. They're that big, physical, dominant team that we won with a couple of years ago that I know, Mike, is your... Like, you like domination around the rim, right? And being able to protect the rim and to be able to attack it. Milwaukee's one of those teams. And so guilty. their ability to protect the rim... plays like that's think about how that matches up with THT's game and with Russell Westbrook's game. That's the strength of their game too. So oftentimes before we when we recorded yesterday, I was like, oh, I'm worried we're gonna get smoked in this game because the strength of their defense takes away what we're good at, or like what our best players right now are good at. And you were a lot more optimistic about it, D. And a big part of why that game went the way that it did and it was as competitive as it was is Talen Horton-Tucker, man. He looks good.
He can play. The conversation about Alex Caruso will, like, I feel like it's almost like the Luka Doncic and Trae Young conversation. Like, anytime you bring up one name, you're going to have to bring up the other. And so we bring up THT and inevitably Caruso's name is going to come up. The Lakers didn't make a bad choice by saying we want to keep Talen Horton-Tucker. We could talk all we want about Alex Caruso, but saying we want THT on our team, mm-hmm. that's a good choice. That's a mm-hmm. good decision. This kid is a marvelous offensive player, and he has worked on his game over the last two summers in ways where you see the growth exponentially. And it reminds me of that story that like Tony Allen told on Chris Vernon's radio show, so where he was watching him in the G League. South Bay Lakers were playing the Memphis Hustle down in Memphis, and THT looked over at TA and was just like, I ain't even supposed to be here.
Yeah, THT's right? going off. He's in the middle of going nuts. Yeah.
Yes. He's got like 40 points that game or 30 something points. And that sort of THT had that sort of confidence in game for the G League. He did not quite have that for the actual league, right? And so he was what you would call a quadruple A player, right? Where it's just like, mm-hmm. you're not quite a big leagues guy yet, but the talent is definitely there. He's a big league player now, Pete. And he's looking like a five-tool player, if we're going to keep the baseball analogy going. Mm-hmm. Because not only was he showing what he could do offensively, Mike, he had some really, really good defensive possessions where he is leveraging the tools that he has defensively in ways that are going to be super important to this Lakers team. And I'm very interested to see what his role looks like when LeBron comes back. It's almost just like, can you not start this guy and get it away with it? I'm not actually sure at this point. He is showing to be comfortable shooting the three ball, both off the dribble and as a spot-up guy. He is a devastating rim seeker in early transition and transition offense. He's one of the only guys who can get to the basket all on his own and is strong enough and plays with enough force that it's hard to actually not get bumped off by him when he is going to the basket. He knocked off Chris Middleton a couple of times, and I sent this in our group chat, but towards the end of that game, Pete, you mentioned that they had Connaughton guarding Russell Westbrook. You know why they had that happen is because they put Drew Holiday on THT, and that tells you all you need to know about how much of a threat that they thought THT was that game, that they put Drew freaking Holiday on him. Not Chris Middleton, not anyone, and they actually put then Connaughton on Russ, and it's just like, oh, okay, well, this is how you see it going. And so the other coach tells you what they think of you by how they defend you offensively. And in the same way that, oh, AD was isolated against Giannis, and I saw a lot of strong side zone help, right? That's not to say Giannis can't handle AD on his own, but they're just like, yeah, guess what?
You're not going to beat us tonight.
We're still going to make it super hard for you. The other coach shows you what they think of you every single possession. And if you watch the game, that's another game within the game. And so look out for stuff like that about where the matchups are. But Mike, I want to hear your thoughts about THT because I've been rambling.
Well, I first just shout out to Jesse Buss once again and the Lakers scouting department. And
unbelievable.
I mean, so THT, they got him at pick number 46. And part of the reason why they got him is because they scout great and they actually watch guys in person. But when the draft came along, THT was hurt. His foot was hurt. People didn't know how long he was going to be out. And that certainly impacted him. But the Lakers said, nope, like we're not letting that talent get past us. And they took him. And here he is, guys. As the day that we're recording this, THT will turn 21 in a week. So he's still 20. That was what his age was at the time. And I tweeted a couple moments ago his averages for this season. So three games, small sample size, but still, to me, all the more impressive because he didn't have a preseason. He basically played like 2.5 preseason games. And so he didn't have any ramp up time. We always talk about how you can't replicate NBA action and it takes guys a while to get going. Well, not him, apparently. And he played a back to back for his first two and then bounces back at Milwaukee. You guys already described their defense. So 23 points on 49% from the field. He's making 40% of his threes. He's made all 12 of his free throws, which is very significant for the way that he plays because teams are going to have to foul him when he gets inside to go to the rim. He's rebounding the basketball, 7.3 boards. He's not really passing a ton, but that's not what his role has been at this time. I think when LeBron comes back, we'll maybe see a little bit more passing. But after the game, I asked him, and sometimes this is a bit of a lead. Like I thought I knew what the answer was going to be. So it's a little bit of a leading question, but it's like, hey, did you think that you were going to improve this much? And THT is not, he is a pretty humble person. When you ask him a question, he'll give a short answer. He's not going to get into it too much, but he's also not going to just say something he doesn't think. And he very quickly said, yes, I did expect this amount of improvement. And the reason is because I trust my work. I trust the work that I put in the summertime, which is music to Coach Pete's ears as he nods.
Oh, man. He's so good, man.
Trust so the word, Mike.
And I thought he was going to get better, but I, in the Darius mold, kind of wanted to see how much better he got for this regular season until I thought that he could really take on the defensive duty that Frank Vogel and Rob Pelinka had mentioned. And that might be the end of the floor that I'm even more excited about because that's going to be part of, and also the three-point shooting, because that's going to be what they do need when LeBron comes back. So I am all the way on board with him starting when LeBron comes back. And I think LeBron starts for Melo and then THT could just start for Bradley. And you could play that way. Cause I don't have a player, Pete, that's better on both ends of the court that I'm going to bring off the bench than THT. I just don't. Do you?
No. And it's funny. One of the more interesting parts of Kobe's career to me all these years later is before he was Kobe, meaning before his first title in particular. And Dee, maybe you remember, it was either his second or his third season, Rick Fox broke his hand, and Fox was the starting small forward on the team. And in terms of the depth chart, Kobe was behind Eddie Jones and Fox, who had both, and the Lakers were trying to be a title team, right? Shaq was on the squad. Kobe's development had to occur within a team with title aspirations. Very similar context to Talen. On a lot of other teams in the league, Talen would have averaged 15 to 17 points per game last season because he would have had the ball and would have had the touches to that degree. Different development arc when you're on a team that's competing for something. And Kobe started that year just gangbusters. He was so good to start that season. And that was the conversation. It's like, well, shit, how do we put this guy back on the bench, right? Like, sure, Fox is good. Sure, Eddie Jones. Everybody loves Eddie Jones. But how do you put him back on the bench? And that's, in many ways, like, talent makes a leap that's undeniable, that cream rising to the top, that he's going to force some hands on that. I want to talk about his defense real quick because I think that he, yeah. Darius, I think he's essential to small ball working with this team. Because just because you don't go small doesn't mean that physicality doesn't matter anymore. In fact, in many ways, you have to make more decisions.
More, it matters more. It matters
and
more.
So Talen is physical as shit. He's such a tank on both ends of the floor on a team that's desperately needed a couple of tanks. And LeBron's one of those guys too, that it's part of what makes it work. Did you see his box outs on Giannis? And he had a couple of, there were some plays where Giannis went over the top of him. And that's something that DeRozan did too. That's going to be a weakness of his, right? In terms of evaluating of what can and can't he do defensively. But he had his career high in rebounding. He was boxing guys out. He can do some of the physical things, the strength things that you need from a player that can also handle the ball and bust your ass on the other end of the floor. So that's a super unique weapon, man.
He is a forceful player in a team that needs to be built around force in whatever way they're going to play. You're going to play big, you better play with force. You're going to play smaller, you better play with force. You've got LeBron James and Russell Westbrook on your team. You have Anthony Davis, who is, I think, being maligned for things that are basically just like, have you not watched Anthony Davis his whole career? Some of this stuff is just what he is as a player. THT, though, when defensively, the things that he understands is that he's got big, strong hands and long arms, and he understands how to use his body in ways that are going to absorb contact and then stalemate you. And so, I don't know if you guys ever did this, but when I was a kid, I'd turn on Prime Ticket and there'd be some just random sport on.
Surfing. Kelly
Slater. Surfing would be
yeah.
on. Yes. Or beach volleyball.
Uh-huh. Karch Karai and all them dudes. Yeah.
Or sumo wrestling.
Was Billy Mack up in that?
Billy Mack and Paul Sunderland, former Lakers play-by-play guy too. They were both part of that. I'm almost certain with Billy Mack. I know for sure with Paul Sunderland.
Yeah. Billy talks about the times where he just covered everything for Prime Ticket, like every sport, every role, just yeah, all the time. I wish I could have watched
that. He was always the fill-in guy. Forgive me, D. He was always the fill-in guy for like all those different sports, right? He was the guy who called Kobe's 81 game, right? Like Joel Myers was out and that was, he was there for Kobe's 81. Yeah, Billy Mack hustled for all those sports. Anyway, continue. You're watching the good old days of Prime Ticket and...
Prime Ticket, ESPN, all of these things, flip around, random sports are on, right? Oh, skeet shooting's on. I'm going to watch
some
skeet shooting,
yeah.
right? Oh, like sumo wrestling's on. I'm going to watch sumo wrestling. And THT, he is, in his own way, a little E-Honda out there for my street fighter days. He is a dude, he's got these big, strong hands, these long arms, and when you get into him, he does not move. And there are, when you watch sumo, there are constant stalemates. These guys go, they bull rush each other, they load up, and then boom, they are there in the middle of the ring, and no one's moving at all. And THT, when he is in his bag defensively, as they say, he makes you play at the same height and level that he is, right? And so, when DeRozan put him in the torture chamber some, he was just like, nah, I'm too crafty for you. I am ball faking you, and I am freezing you to the ground where you're comfortable, but I am now going over the top of you, and you don't have anything for that, right? But when THT is able to stunt you and keep you down with him, there's no moving him. And then when you both are the same level, he's got these other tools that are like, oh, I'm poking the ball away now. Now we're in a scrum. And it's just like, well, shit, where'd the ball go? Oh, it got kicked between your legs, or now we're in a jump ball. Or so there is a strength and power element to him. There's a force to him. And you see it most on offense, but if the Lakers are going to be the best versions of themselves this year, that same force needs to show up defensively. It needs to show up when guys are trying to drive into him, that he is bumping them off, that he is turning them around, that he is going to keep guys in front of him in the way that Anthony Davis talked about post-game, that is going to matter for the team's overall ceiling on defense to raise up a couple of notches.
Darius just stacked analogy on analogy on analogy.
It's like Inception. You're just dropping from one level to the next. It's great.
I actually was teaching my kids how to play Street Fighter 2 the other day, and my wife jumped in for one game, and I had her choose E-Honda just so she could, because one of the simplest moves is when you just tap the button hard. Yeah. And you can win a whole couple rounds with that until you learn how to jump off the wall with Chun-Li. But I'll get off that one for now. The hands with THT, there is an element I think of when I see him play in that sense of Kawhi, because of the hands and because of the power and because of the base. And LeBron can do that when he wants to too. But I think that was something that early in his career Kawhi got sort of known for. And you know, look, we're mentioning names like Kobe and Kawhi. Right now we're talking about THT. Clearly it's exciting where he could still get to, but I don't think it's extra to be thinking, at least in the immediate way, for what this kid still can get accomplished. And you know, I do think that it changes the outlook some. If you just look at where the Lakers are right now, they're 500. The easiest part of their schedule is gone. We don't know for sure if LeBron's coming back next game. But he has provided some light in this when you extrapolate things out to the long term.
Very much so. We've had a few guys who have gone elsewhere between Julius and B.I., D'Angelo, several other players, you know, that are quality role players around the league. We've had some young players come through here in the not too distant past, and he's the best at this age of any of them. And that's not to say that it becomes something more or bigger down the line. I think that the sky is really the limit for him. There's a lot of places where he can still grow. And so, yeah, him, if he's making that third year leap, that has major ramifications for the team that may not feel like it right now, because this season is kind of sucked on several levels, but it going forward, it's super important. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow's conversation about the idea of rim protection and using that Milwaukee game. We'll talk about that end of the first half where we let go of the rope a bit. A lot to talk about defensively with this team. That I thought that game was a really interesting one to zoom in on and kind of pull your magnifying glass out for. And tomorrow we'll do just that here on the Laker Film Room Podcast.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double team. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one,
miss it!
Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.